The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Hello, welcome along to this week's episode of the Let's Get Running podcast. How is the Caramel Kid?
I'm good. How is Sean and Sean?
He's doing well. He's recording this in his bedroom. He's been demoted from his usual place to record because Molly's got an important call today, my wife Molly, so I'm demoted into the quiet room, which is great.
So we know who the boss is then.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. I know which side of the bread.
She wears the trousers, you wear the shorts, the running shorts, yeah?
Yeah, that's it, yeah. So yeah, demoted. But anyway, how's it been? You've just been back from the Europeans. You enjoy it?
Yeah, I just got back today. It's crazy. Obviously, we had tickets for all the sessions and stuff. We didn't actually see much GB athletes. But I didn't manage to sneak into their hotel and find them. But we saw a few athletes from other countries just roaming around,
yeah,
in the stadium and stuff. Great. Yeah, it was good. Some like GB did really well.
Yeah,
they got loads of medals.
What was your favourite moment of the whole thing?
It was the men's 10K until the men's 15.
Okay, yeah.
Men's 15 was really good because the Brits were right with the younger Britons.
Yeah,
and then the last 100 meters, apart from first, all the medals kept changing around like crazy.
Yeah. And what a guy, that little young, 17 years old. He's just so cocky. Like when I was 17, I barely know what like left from right. Do you know what I mean? I was more interested in trying to go down the local pub and get served than I was in going and winning a European medal. It's amazing. So
there were his older brother, because they were getting interviewed.
Yeah.
And the younger one, the baby one, he was like, yeah, I've been dreaming my whole life. You're only 17. So he was obviously putting him down.
Jesus.
But yeah, 17. Dave, that's a good performance, double 15 and 5K.
Yeah. Old.
The worst performance is men's 8.
For Brits. We didn't get anyone through, did we? No.
Because this year they all made crazy good breakthroughs. They've all run 144. And then they had three Polish people in the final, and two of them PB'd in the final at low 45.
Yeah.
So they just were consistent every round and obviously raced really well. With the Brits, they just raced bad and they can run fast enough, but they weren't in. So yeah, that was probably my biggest disappointment.
Yeah. I'm really interested by Poland because they're really good at middle distance events, aren't they? Like they're amazing at, they've got great kicks. A lot of them, I can't say the whole of the nation's got great kicks, but it seems to be they're really good at producing guys and girls that can kick. Like the girl in the 1500 meters was amazing.
In the relays they were winning.
Yeah.
Until GB started mopping up in the 4x1.
Yeah.
In the gold. But they were winning the tournament.
Oh right, yeah, overall medals.
Good. Yeah, just for athletics though, because obviously Europeans now is cycling, swimming, it's all everything, isn't it?
Yeah, nice. But you enjoyed Berlin as well. You'd recommend it as a city to visit.
Yeah, like I was with my coach and my friend and stuff, and they were like, considering, oh, we could live here. It was actually way cheaper than I imagined.
Yeah. I've heard it's cheap to rent as well. It's not an expensive city to live in, so it'd be quite a nice place to live. You've got to learn the German, though. It's cold. Can you handle that?
It's cold in the winter. German, forget the German. They talk English. That's fine.
Just talk a bit louder and point. You'll be fine.
We was on the train and they were making announcements because the train was delayed.
Yeah.
And he was like, talking ages, and the train's packed like sardines, yeah.
Yeah.
And then as soon as he finished, I went, Scheiße. Everyone was laughing. And my friend said, is that the only word you know? I said, no, I know. Give me shit.
Oh, nice. So you were integrating already? Okay. So no bus stories this week. We haven't got any updates from the bus because you've been swanning around in Europe. being European.
Yeah, I've been on holiday 2 weeks, yeah. So no craziness.
And you're well up for now reversing the Brexit vote, given you want to now go and live in Germany.
No, that's not me. That's someone else.
Let's start campaigning. But, anyway.
What about you? You're coming to England tomorrow.
I'm coming to England tomorrow, yeah, which is going to be fun. I've got a couple of meetings. So my main job is I organise, I've said this about four times, but I'll say it again. I organise like run clubs for companies, and mainly because I think it's, you know, I love running, but it's a really good way of kind of getting people together and running. And it's you know, obviously outdoor exercise is proven to be the best way to relieve stress, or one of the best ways to relieve stress and improve mental health. So I'm meeting with a mental health charity who we're going to maybe partner with and look to sort of offer a service together. So I'm going to do that, which is going to be fun. I'll let you know how that goes. And I've got a couple of other meetings over there, which should be good, which should be fine. But also I've got a wedding on Saturday. So that should be fun. I'm doing the park run in Mile End on Saturday morning in some form. Hopefully. I've got to decide, speak to Nate, who's been designing my plan, see what he thinks about what I should be doing on Saturday morning, whether I should run the park run or just do the session. But I'll be there in Mile End. Oh, actually, hang on. This will probably come out after the wedding. So yeah, if I did see you there, nice to see you. If I didn't see you there, maybe next time. We'll see. But this week's show, we've got a really good interview. We've got an interview with a sprinter. Now, the reason we spoke to the sprinter is because she's had an interesting life. She is a very committed athlete. She came seventh in the 200 metres at the Europeans. Her name's Beth Dobbin. And Beth, we hear more when you come to listen, but the main thing we picked out of her interview is she works four or five jobs in order to make her athletics career happen. And it's a big thing for a lot of us, like working in cities and doing jobs. Running is difficult to fit into a busy schedule. So we wanted to talk about some tips from us about how to make it work and how to integrate running, if you can, into your busy lives. So as an athlete, Jermaine, when you were training hard, well, how did you manage to fit it all in? Could you do everything? Could you do everything you wanted to do when you were running as a career?
It's like when I was running, I was full time. I was all or nothing.
Yeah.
But when I was working a proper job, I'd try to do late so I could train in the morning.
Yeah.
And go to work tired.
Right.
But like what I'm doing now, so I don't get too fat. I just run. I run home from work because obviously some places ain't got showers at work. So obviously a lot of people run to work, run up. So I just run home from work.
Ah, okay. Makes sense.
So that's one way I've like fit the running in.
Yeah.
Just run home. And at least when you get home, obviously you can just go to sleep and rest.
Yeah. And I used to know a guy, he doesn't run anymore, but his name's Richard Scott. He used to run for Highgate, my club. And Richard Scott, I always think if you say you can't fit it in, Richard Scott is a great example of how you can make it work. He just was so committed to marathon running that he would run. He was a geneticist at Great Ormond Street Hospital. So it's a pretty high-powered job. Like it's a difficult, stressful job. He would either run in and run out. And then if he went out for dinner, he'd run to the dinner. And then he'd run back to the dinner. He found every way, like every journey he could make, he'd make it via running. So there was no like wasted time sitting on tubes or wasted time sitting on the train or whatever. He just used to run everywhere.
And, you know, but that means he must be smelly everywhere he turns up.
He must be. Maybe he's got some super, super strong deodorant, but his girlfriend when he met is his wife, so she obviously wasn't put off too much. And, you know, he was...
She lost her sense of smell.
She lost her sense of smell. But you can do it if you want to make it work. You've just got to be, yeah, you can do the commuting with your stuff. You can commute, run all the time. But another thing I was thinking about is as well to make sure you have like a really good routine. So if you know, Tuesday is your track session day, that takes priority. You know you're going to go and do it. You know it's in the calendar. You don't let it slip, which is really important. So you can't really make things up on the hoof if you want to make sure you run and live a busy life. But the other thing I thought was really important is to know exactly what you want to achieve in your workouts. So a lot of the time, you might on a Wednesday, you know you're going to do a tempo run. You haven't got a lot of time, or you're training perhaps you're training speed, or you're training anaerobic conditioning or whatever, or anaerobic capacity. If you know what you want to achieve in that workout, you can adapt something and come up with something slightly different and probably maybe more efficient, that still gives you the benefit that you are after. Does that make sense?
So perhaps if you know you're going to do some speed work, hills are a really quick, fast way of getting that done. So you can, you know, go down to the to a hill, do some quick hill reps. That will shave you time. But it's knowing what you want to achieve in each workout. And then if you need to move things around and be flexible, you know, right, I haven't done this type of workout this week. I've got to make sure I fit that in this fortnight circle. So it's no good blindly following a plan. You've got to know what the plan is doing for you and then be able to adapt and structure your week and your life around those requirements. That makes sense?
But you can also, I like also sneak extra stuff in. So like, instead of taking the lift, you take the stairs. But when you do the stairs, you can either do the weight stair session or the plyometric stair session. So you can either take two or three steps at a time. Yeah. So that's like the weights. Obviously, it's going to do your glutes, hammies and quads, obviously. So you're like powering up the stairs to two or three at a time.
Yeah.
Or you can do the plyo one where you do one step at a time, but as quick as you can.
Nice. Because I was going to ask you about the gym stuff. Because the gym, I think, is the hardest thing to... It's the additional thing you should be doing, but it's hard to fit in with time to get to the gym, get ready, or blah, 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 blah. But doing that step thing sounds pretty cool. Right?
So you could squeeze, though, like you think most people in offices could easily do that 3-4 times a day.
Yeah.
And they won't get a sweat on, so the odour won't be like pouring out their armpits.
Yeah.
But they could, you know, like squeeze a little extra. And I bet if you did that for a week, you know, like building up, that would, you'll notice some difference.
Yeah, I like it. You've always been a big fan of the gym. Like, do you like body weight stuff as well? Or do you stick to the gym session?
At the moment, I'm just doing body stuff and it's working fine. So yeah, body stuff's really good. Like press ups, you can do arm dips off chairs. So these are sort of things you can do anywhere.
Yeah.
So you could easily squeeze those in the park, you know. Or I would say in your office chair, but they usually got wheels, so you'd be wheeling away.
And then the routine that I've been following for the Project 220 is on the show notes there'll be a place you can download and view all the videos, and they're all outdoor bodyweight exercises. So I tend to fit it in. I'll do on my easy days or on my easy runs, I'll easy run and then I'll stop and I'll have a little rest and then I'll do the core straight after that, because it saves you time. It saves you getting ready and dressed to go and do everything again, just to kind of tag things along each other. So you've just, you know, you've got a parcel of an hour where you're going to do both your easy run and your core exercises, and it saves time again rather than doing it twice.
Because obviously people are busy, but they say little often is better than this one big. Because if you do weights, like one day you do crazy amounts of weights in the gym, you're sore for like a couple of days.
Yeah.
But when I was training in Ethiopia, they just did a little bit every day. So they're never too sore from doing the weight session.
Okay.
And so if people are busy and not working and stuff, imagine they just fit a little bit of the exercise in at the end of their runs, like you said.
Yeah.
They won't need a dedicated gym session or a dedicated plyometric session because they're squeezing in at the end of all their runs.
Yeah, I like it. Time efficient. Nice. And what do you think about getting up early? Because I know a lot of people, there's these things like 5 a.m. club, 6 a.m. club. Did you ever used to get up when you were working and running and get up at 5 a.m. get a session done? Would you bother with that?
If you've got the passion, you'll do it because you're thinking, oh, I've got to get fit, I want to beat someone, so I need to get a certain time. So you'll do it, but it's obviously hard. But the best thing about it is going running, coming back, having breakfast and going to bed. But that's only pro runners. But when you've got to come back and then go to work, you go to work and people say, oh, late night, you're tired. I said, no, I just went running.
I could never do it. Apparently there's, isn't it like the levels of cortisol, which is the hormone that is related to stress, is highest if you break your sleep and wake up at 5 a.m. that level of cortisol is really high, and it's hard to get down, so it can contribute to regular 5 a.m. wake ups will contribute to stress levels. So yeah, I'm not interested in that. I think if you
so basically you're advising people to have a lay in and come to work late.
Get
so
to work
gonna be late. Loads of unemployed people are listening to our podcast.
I always used to run into work, and I think like I'd have a session scheduled. So one thing I used to do is like if I had 10 times a K, I know a K is about 3 minutes of hard running. So I just think, right, I've got into work. I'll just do 10 times 3 minutes with a minute recovery, fartlek. And that makes it so much easier than going to a track, getting all warmed up. I know it's probably better for you, but if you haven't got time, It's just the easy way to do it. And you can think like miles, right? That's about 5 minutes. So you do 6 times 5 minutes, or you do, you know, do 800s, 2.5 minutes. You know what I mean? You don't need to go to a track or find an area.
But you need a good stretch of road, because you don't want to be doing an effort where you have to go across a busy road and get mowed down.
No. So you've got to plan that in advance. Yeah. I was always quite lucky running through Wapping and stuff when I was living in London. But yeah, I know what you mean. You've got to make sure it's appropriate. But you're right about
people that travel, it takes 40 minutes to get home.
Hmm.
And if they run, it could take an hour and 10. So it's only a little bit longer.
Yeah.
But it's just like using that time more efficient. Because you think it's 40 minutes to get home plus the rest of the time they've got to go training. That's more time.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, what about to Beth? She's talked about her story. But I think our last kind of message I kind of leave with is stop making excuses. Like, I think a lot of the time, like,
coming from you. Yeah. Okay.
Make it a priority. Like, it's, if you want to run and it is your dream, like, you get one shot at this life and you want to run a lot, then make it happen. Don't keep coming up with excuses. Oh, I couldn't do it this week because, I mean, I've had a few late nights, blah, 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 blah. I think if you're going to try and do something, make it a priority and stop coming up with stupid excuses for why you didn't or didn't do that. You've got to seize the opportunity. So,
The listeners are going to remember that. And then when I asked you on Project Dixon podcasts and you say, oh, Jermaine, I couldn't fit the core in, I want every listener that's disgruntled by Sean's comment to complain.
I'm waiting for it. I'm waiting for it. Here we go. Well, here's the interview. Here we are. So on today's show, we are talking to the British 200-meter champion, Beth Dobbin. How are you doing? All right, Beth?
Yeah, I'm very well, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Good to have you on. How does it feel to win that British title?
Yeah, it was literally amazing. It still isn't fully sinking in because, you know, you don't really have time to celebrate. You're straight back into training for the Europeans. But I'm really looking forward to celebrating at the end of the season and just reflecting on what I've actually achieved, because I never thought I would achieve that.
Yeah. And what was it like at the race, seeing your name come up on the board as the champion? Did you think you'd got it when you crossed the line?
I did. I was like 89. But I just didn't want to start celebrating just in case I hadn't, because I knew there was someone else. I think it was Bianca, really, really close to me.
Yeah.
So I didn't dare start celebrating just in case it wasn't me that it was given to. So, and then, yeah, it was just pure relief because we were waiting for quite a while. For whatever reason, it felt like about 10 minutes waiting for the results. It probably wasn't that long, but it was much longer than normal. We were just all staring at the screen. I had like my fingers crossed about 8 times and just praying that it would be my name. And then when it was just pure relief.
Fantastic. Did you think you had a shot at it before the race started? Were you expecting to get into the medals?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, how this season had been going, I kind of, you know, after the 22.8s at Stockholm and Eton, I kind of said, right, I can win this if training goes well between now and then and I run a good race. So I was expecting to win, and I would have even been disappointed with second. And that's crazy to think of this time the previous year. If I'd have finished second, that would have been amazing. But athletes always want more. So then when you take it to the next level, you're like, no, I want to be the best. So I would have been disappointed if I didn't win. And I definitely believed I could. It was just believing in myself, really.
Fantastic. And you said preparing for the Europeans now. Like, what's your expectations? Have you got like a goal for the competition?
Yeah, I'm just trying to take it step by step. So obviously the first step is to make the final. So I've got the semis on the Friday night. And then once you're in the final, I genuinely believe that anything can happen. And it's whoever runs the best race on the day. Obviously, there's the favourites going into it. I think I'm ranked 5th. So, you know, to finish anywhere 5th or upwards would be great. Obviously, everyone wants a medal. It would be nice to get a medal. But at the same time, I am quite realistic. And I know that this is, you know, my first championships ever. You know, I've not done anything as a junior. So I just want to learn from the experience, learn from the other athletes around me, what they kind of do with the championships, because I'm going in kind of not really knowing what you're supposed to be doing, you know, I'm asking about recovery methods and things like that. So it is going to be a learning experience. But at the same time, I do want to do well because it's my second ever time putting the GB vest on, and you want to make your country proud.
Yeah. And what does your training look like in these final few weeks? Are you sort of tapering? I guess for a marathoner, that's what we do. But what's your focus now in training for these remaining couple of weeks?
Yeah, I mean, it is a tricky one because this is like a first time for us. Normally after trials, you kind of, well, whatever you do after that, it doesn't really matter. Trials was like the big one. Whereas now we've got another championships to prepare for. So we're kind of just doing similar to what we did before trials. And I respond quite well to like being in heavy training. So that's quite a surprise to people. Most people, you know, respond well to easing off and tapering, like you said, whereas I'm kind of the opposite. The more work I do, the better I seem to run. So we're kind of just doing what we've always done and keeping training the same, working on my strength, so my finish, and still in the gym. So I haven't really changed that much, just because that's what suits me.
Yeah. And look, going back to the beginning of your running career, when did you realise that you had a talent for sprinting?
It's always the typical, you know, I was used to win sports day. So it's definitely came from that. I was always, you know, beating even the boys in PE. So I definitely noticed it kind of like at secondary school, maybe even a primary school. But I did actually start out in athletics through cross country. So I was lucky. I was I could not run for miles and miles, but I did loads of cross countries. And I always used to finish either second or third. I never used to win it. Whereas with the sprints, I used to win it. And it was just a bit easier training, not having to run as far. And I was thinking, yeah, go down that route. And yeah, it was quite a young age. I remember doing cross country in like year 5 and 6 at school. But when you're that age, you don't really take it seriously. You just do whatever. And I couldn't almost distinguish between the two. There was just one running really fast and then one running as far as you can. So I always enjoyed running, but it wasn't until I got older that I did specify sprints.
And it's not, you're from Doncaster, is that right?
Yeah, so my dad is from Dunfermline, and then he moved down here, met my mum, so that's where the Scottish link is. And then I was born in Doncaster, raised there. So yeah, Doncaster Athletics Club was like my first ever club I went to.
I was going to say, Doncaster's not like a hotbed of British sprinting. Like, who did you train with then? Who was your first coach down in Doncaster?
Yeah, so my first coach was someone called John Blackshaw. So I kind of went to that group as a young athlete. I was probably 13 when I first met him, and I was kind of like the slow one and looking up to all the older athletes. And yeah, just from there, he was always really patient with me, and I was always dedicated, so I think that helped going forward.
Yeah. And were you doing the long and the short then as well? Were you kind of, as a teenager, were you more focusing down on those shorter distances?
Yeah, so then when I moved to John, so when I first joined the athletics club, it actually was with the aim of doing longer distance running, because I just thought, you know, that's what I'd be better at. Then when I moved to John, I think they did like a taster sessions for different events. And they said, you know, you should actually try sprints. So John was a sprints and jump coach, so I moved to him. And then, yeah, I just loved it. But I still like the like longer sprints. I still feel like I'm probably not long distance to you guys, but 100 is too short for me. I definitely prefer like the 2s and the 4s. So I still feel like I've got a bit of endurance.
and through your teenage years, you suffered from epileptic seizures. When did that start?
13 when it started. So it started with kind of like twitches that no one knew really what it was. And then one day at school I had this huge epileptic seizure that was quite difficult because it took like my speech, my movement down the left side of my body, my memory. So then kind of after that it was almost starting from scratch. So I had a lot of time off training. I think I'd only just started in this new group. And then this happened a few months in, so I had to take a lot of time off while I got back walking and everything. And then I started up again, but I was on a lot of medication, so it took me a long time to get used to you winning everything as like a 12, 13-year-old. And then I went back when I was 14, and I'd been able, I'm back walking and everything, but I was just so slow. I just couldn't believe it. It was just, I didn't realize how much it had taken from me. And not just that, the medication I was on, it made me really, really sleepy. So I would, get in from school, have a nap, go to training at 6, get in like 8-ish, have something to eat, and then I was straight in bed till like 8 the next day. So it felt like I was sleeping like 14 hours a day. But I just did it for enjoyment, really. I wasn't, after I went on my medication, I was just rubbish. Yeah. Put it bluntly.
How many years do you think it knocked you back then?
So I was on my medication. Luckily, the medication I went on, it worked for me straight away, because there's so many different types of epilepsy. I think there's like a lot of different types. It's quite hard to find a different the medication to work. So my medication, luckily, I think because of the type of seizure it had, it was quite a rare seizure from taking all the movement down my left side. They knew what medication to put me on, so the one they put me on worked straight away, and it got my seizures under control. So I had a few funny turns, but nothing like that seizure that day. So I came off my medication when I was 17, but throughout that I was still doing my athletics, just doing it absolutely. I was rubbish. Just absolutely rubbish. Just not doing very well, but I just enjoyed it. And then a couple of months after I came off my medication, I was like a new person. I was like dropping seconds off my time. And my mum did say that would happen, because kind of when you're taking this medication, you don't realise that it's changing you, and it's just normal for you. Whereas my mum could see it, and she could see that I wasn't myself, and she was always like quite... She wanted me to come off my medication, because she did used to say, when you come off your medication, I think you'll run so much quicker. And it was just a matter of months after coming off it that the times just dropped down.
Wow. And do you have to manage the condition now? Does it affect your training today?
So, no, it's more like the psychological side of it. So I do have to be careful not to do too much. And for me, it's like blood sugar dropping. So any of my training partners will tell you, I'm just always eating at training, because I just get a bit paranoid that when your blood sugar starts to drop, kind of just feel a bit faint anyway, and I don't feel quite myself. So I'm always got my cereal bars at training, energy gels, anything like that, just to kind of manage it. So you do have the odd funny turn, but kind of it's very psychological. So it's, for me, it's more in my head than anything. And when I'm at training, thankfully, that's like my happy place where I want to be. But it doesn't worry me. I just manage it with like a healthy diet and sleeping right and just doing everything I can, not drinking alcohol. That it's everything that athletes do anyway. So I think that's why athletics works so well with it.
And you said that when you came off the medication, you started to see some real progress. But when was it you started to compete in the top sort of level of the domestic scene? Where did you start to feel like you could do that?
It was quite interesting, actually, because when you're growing up, the kind of big school, the big competition is the English schools. So obviously throughout year 7, and I was miles off the standard, I couldn't get it. And then it just so happened that my very last year or chance to do the English schools, that was the year I came off my medication, like 2-3 months. I smashed the standard by like over a second, which was, for me, that was huge, because I couldn't even get the standard the years previous. And it was that year where I went to the English schools there and I got a silver medal. And that was like a turning point. Turned 18, I moved out of my home, I moved to university at Loughborough, met a new coach there, and then from them it was just, I got to represent Scotland and, all these different internationals. I do still feel like I was always catching up. So I would get the standard for, a junior championships the year after.
Right.
Or I'd get the standard for the under 23s a year after. The Commonwealths, again, it was the year after. And there was the UK student, the World Student Games. I got the standard like a few months later. So I feel like I've just been playing catch a lot, and then this year finally turning 24, but I managed standards in time, and it feels like I'm every year I'm catching up, and finally I have caught up.
Yeah, and sprinting, well, I'm not a sprinter, so I don't really know, but it seems a lot of it is about confidence in yourself. Like, have you always had a belief you could do it? Or have you worked on that to improve your going to say, maybe like mental game?
I think you can do athletics, kind of whatever level, and just compete against yourself. And I feel like that's what I was doing. And I did believe in myself, but probably not to get this far. I would just believe that I could be better than what I am now. So, you know, every year I've had little, me and my coach always sit down at the end of the season and write little goals. So like it might have been going sub-24 one year. And for my goals for this season were just to be running 23 low. I would have been pleased with that. So I think that's where it came from, setting myself these little goals. And then when you achieve them, then that's when you start to believe in yourself. And I definitely think this year I believe in myself more than ever, because obviously I'm running better than I have ever done. I always have believed that I could be better, probably just not just this level.
Yeah, fantastic. And you're set up now. You're currently not on funding.
Mm.
How are you making? You must have finished your degree now at Loughborough too.
Yeah.
Yeah. How are you making it work? How are you managing to sort of support your athletics career at the moment?
It isn't easy, but it involves four different jobs. So it does sound awful, but basically, so my top job is like a receptionist. Yeah. So you can work at seven different facilities. So one of them is the athletic tracker, and then you've got like the swimming pool, all the different sports facilities on campus, and that kind of works on a casual basis. So your managers will send you out the availability of shifts, and that's how I've been working so much, because there's seven different facilities that need cover. There's like three or four shifts going on one day, how I've been working so much. So that has allowed me, you know, to work every day from like October till April, with obviously the occasional day off. And then throughout April going forward, I do work less just because I'm traveling for training. Yeah. So that's the main job. The second job is, again, very, very similar. It's another casual job, handing out the parking passes to cars that come onto Loughborough University campus. And that's kind of like the backup I do if I can't get a shift at the other job. So for whatever reason, there's one day where there's no shifts going at the reception job, I'll then get one at the security gatehouse.
Yeah.
On Thursdays, I do two school visits. So that's Thursdays and my day off training.
Yeah.
I'll travel and do two school visits. So just like do circuits with them and then talk about athletics. And then my last job is for power results sent to me, and I put them on a spreadsheet that allows then the results to be published on Power of 10. Oh, so that one's really good, because I can do that whilst I'm at the other job. So you kind of at one job, once you've finished all your jobs for the day, then I'm doing my Power of 10 work. So yeah, it's very busy, but it kind of is a sense of, you know, you've not got an option, so you just get on with it, and that is reality for you. So you just do it. You don't even think about it. You just get on with it.
And so you're working every day, pretty much?
Pretty much. Like throughout the winter, I started in October, and it would be like, you know, I've worked maybe 3 weeks in a row and then I have a day off. I just didn't like to turn shifts down, because I knew that in the summer I would be taking time off for competitions. So at the start I wasn't sure whether I'd made the Commonwealth team, because I knew I'd not got the standard, but I thought there might be a relay spot available. So again, I was trying to do as many shifts as possible so that I could have time off to go there, or afford to go there. And like now it's worked out really well, because I've probably be working up until, you know, the Sunday when I fly out. So it's worked out well. But when you're doing it, it is quite brutal.
Yeah, I can imagine. Jeez. And how do you look at it? Like, I've spoken to a few people, like my co-host who's not here, Jermaine, he sort of says that actually to be on funding, they put a lot of pressure on you, and you've got to do this and that. And actually, it could make you hungrier to be off funding. How do you look at it? How would you prefer to be obviously on funding, or do you think it's working for you as the situation is now?
I think every athlete would prefer to be on funding, and they'd be lying if they said they didn't. But at the same time, I don't necessarily mind doing what I'm doing, because it has worked. Yeah. It would be nice to work slightly less. Like throughout the winter, it is brutal, and you can only really get away with it because you're not running at high enough speeds or whatever, because you're in winter training. So throughout So you can get away with it in the winter. But for me, it's a drive because you get up every day at 6 and you haven't had 8 hours sleep. You're really tired. But then when you're on the start line for your races, you think, look, like it always goes through in my mind, look how much you've put in and don't mess up because you've worked hard for this. And I don't, when I think about the hard work I've put in, I don't think about what I've done on the track, because for me, that's enjoyable. That's what I want to be doing. I enjoy training. Mm. But for me, the hard work is, you know, sitting at a desk 7 till 3 every day and then training after it. So when I'm on the start line, I do think about that, and I think, you know, you've put yourself through all this, make it worth it. So for me, it definitely does drive you. It would obviously be amazing to have the funding and be able to work less. I still think even if I did get on any kind of funding, it would be a case of I would still work, because I've never known anything different. I wouldn't work 7 days a week, but I definitely would keep in touch with it, because it's worked so far, and it's nice to have a routine as well.
Yeah, and do you think you're missing out on things and missing out on life because you're working and to work so hard? You're very focused on what you want to achieve, what you want to do, that you don't worry about that too much on a day to day basis.
You definitely do miss out, especially because of the job I do. It involves working weekends, but I always used to see that as like, that's me keeping out of trouble. So, you know, when some people are tempted to go out on the weekends, when you start work, you can't go out. Yeah. But then at the same time, this year in particular, it has resulted in missing out on competitions. So you put in your shifts like a few months in advance. So the July, August shifts, they go out in like April, May, or sometimes even earlier. So you've agreed to do all these shifts. And obviously in April and May, I didn't realise trials was going to be the way it was going to be.
Yeah.
And I agreed to work loads after trials because I thought, you know, I'll go easy before trials and then after trials I'll work much harder because that's the main one out of the way. Obviously I opened up and I'm running well, and then there's a chance that I could be going to Europeans. So after trials, I had maybe two hours sleep, if that. Alarm was up, went off at 6, and I was up for work, and I did the next, like, no. I think it was like 10 days straight. And then going to the World Cup, I was exhausted because I'd just not had any time to get over trials, and I was working every day. Ran at the World Cup a bit tired, so that set me back even further, feeling really tired. And then I had Elaine at the anniversary games, but it was just a case of I just had to turn it down because I'd booked in all these shifts to work. I had managed, obviously I was supposed to be working on the day of the World Cup because I didn't know I'd be doing that. So then my managers were already good enough to give me that off and time to travel to travel there. But then because I didn't have the time off to get over trials, I just had to turn anniversary games down because I just wasn't feeling myself. I was really tired. And so it's kind of like, that's what you look at maybe into next year. If I was to get some kind of financial support, it might mean, you know, October to April I'm still working, but then throughout summer I could work much less to avoid things like that in the future.
Yeah. And what advice can you give to our listeners, because obviously they're mostly full-time working, they're not as at a level that you're not winning, you know, British trials, but what advice would you give to try and make that work, make managing full-time jobs with an athletics career?
Just use it to your advantage. So I always think, you know, I'm in a proper routine. I'm getting up at the same time every day. You know, just use that as your motivation. So when you're maybe struggling with a session or you're on the start line for a race, use what you've done, because it makes you such a stronger person. And again, there's no reason why you can't do well whilst working. I know it is a bit harder, but it definitely shouldn't stop you. And just hopefully your job is something that can work around athletics. So for me, it's quite lucky because I'm not really too active at my job. I'm just sat there. Mm. Whereas obviously some jobs aren't like that, but just try and just put anything in place. So, you know, it might be cooking your meals on your days off so that you've got them, so you're still eating healthy at work, and then when you get in from training at night, you can just eat straight away. Just try to get as organised as possible and let it fuel you.
Yeah, absolutely. Fantastic. Well, it's amazing, the story. Like, I mean, you guys, obviously, you're at the reception there. You're like serving, well, not serving, but guys that are on funding that are your competitors, and you managed to get out there and beat them. That's quite an amazing story. So, brilliant. And
definitely.
Our audience also, being as well as being working people, they're mostly endurance runners, and they're not very good at developing speed. Like for me, when I'm trying to run really fast, I look a mess, like my shoulders are around my ears, and basically to get the most out of my body, I think you've got to try and give it the most you possibly can. But looking at you sprinters, that's completely false. But what could you give us, what advice could you give sort of endurance runners for developing speed? Any simple tips you can provide?
I would say gym is quite important. So for me, things that have worked has been things like power cleans. So, you know, strength exercises in the gym, I think, can help improve speed on the track. But in terms of actual running itself, I think you just mentioned a really important thing there, that most people, when they're trying to try so, so hard, in reality, the best sprinters are so relaxed. So it's kind of, you do need to try to run fast, but you need to stay relaxed as well. So I'd just say to get faster, obviously try and implement things in the gym, and then I'd do maybe one speed session a week where, you know, you might pick 6 to 8 runs to do over like 80 meters to 100 meters, and you're focusing on improving your speed there by staying as relaxed as possible whilst trying to get your legs turning over as quick as possible. So I think they're the two key things.
Excellent. And do you do a lot of drills and plyometrics and things? Is that part of your training schedule?
It is more so in the winter, but my coach kind of has the philosophy of kind of just run, and you know, you are a runner, so practice your running. So we do bits, but the main thing for us is our running sessions on the track. So drills can and plyometrics can supplement it, but I don't think it should be the main thing. But I definitely think if you're doing drills or doing plyometrics, you need to know why you're doing them, so you can do them properly. So I remember when I first joined my coach and I was doing these drills, that I didn't know why I was doing them. So in turn, I wasn't doing them properly. Whereas, you know, he explains to different drills for different things. And, you know, it might be the contacts you're looking at, so firm contacts on the ground, or like response off the ground, that might be another one you're looking at. So make sure when you're doing the drills, you know what it is you're supposed to be doing with them, rather than just doing it for the sake of it.
Yeah, good advice, nice one. I before I sort of let you get back off to your recovery and preparing for the Europeans, I've got three final questions to ask. We ask the same ones to every runner, but I think I might adapt slightly just for you on the last one. The first one is if you could be anywhere running now, where would you be?
Anywhere running now, I would love another chance to run in the London Olympic Stadium. I think that is just so special to any British athlete. But then for training purposes, it has got to be Loughborough. I love, but I'm not, it's probably a boring answer, but I'm not like too flashy, you know. I think just do what you know, and Loughborough to me has worked, so that's definitely the place I would want to train.
Perfect. And the second question is, can you recommend us something? So it can be a TV show, could be a film, could be a book, anything you've seen, done or read recently that you think would be good thing to recommend?
I am, because obviously of my schedule, I don't have too much, I don't have a TV, so I am literally the worst person to ask for this, but I've reflected back to when I was a student, and obviously instead of studying, I watched a series called Revenge, and it is quite girly, so you kind of have to be in your into your like girly TV series to watch it, so sorry for the boys out there, I don't think you would enjoy it, but it is based on like a girl whose dad dies, and she kind of sets revenge on the family that kind of covered up his murder. So it's really, really clever. So if you want a series to watch, I would recommend Revenge.
Okay, on Netflix?
I don't have Netflix, so I don't know. This was on it was on E4 back in the day. I don't even think E4 is still a thing, is it? I don't even know. I don't have a TV. I am useless. I don't even know what is going on in, you know, social life right now. I'm so out of it.
I think you missed Love Island, where we were speaking to Marilyn Nakura yesterday, and then she was talking about Love Island. I've never seen Love Island myself, but apparently this is the big thing at the moment, this TV show. But luckily you missed it, so that's
Yeah, I mean, I did feel left out, but I do use social media. I just don't have a TV or watch TV. I just don't have time for it. So I'll go on social media when I'm at work, but I just don't have time for it. So I've missed out on that one.
And our final question to you is, what, in your opinion, is the greatest endurance performance of all time? Now, given it being a sprint, I didn't realise you had a background in distance running, so you might have a few ideas, but if you can give us your most inspirational track moment you have ever seen or heard about, then that's fine too.
Yeah. So for this one, I think it would be Paula's marathon record. I was quite young when that happened, but I do remember watching Paula growing up, and, you know, she was always on our TV at home. So I think because her record has been so untouchable since, I would definitely say that for me, that is one of the most astonishing performances. But in terms of track, it's probably not of all time, but of when I've, since I've got into athletics, I've really, really enjoyed watching her. So when I watched athletics in the past and watched Laura run, I just think she's just got something different. She's got this just grit and drive, and she just goes for it, and she has done for years, and I really, really enjoy watching her run. I mean, I enjoy all athletics, but I think Laura brings so much excitement to the endurance runs, because you just know she's going to give it everything, and every run she gives it everything. So she's like my, and she's Scottish as well, so she's my favorite endurance.
Excellent. Big up, Laura Muir.
Yes.
Lovely. Well, hopefully, given you have a bit of an endurance background, will we ever see you in a marathon when you've retired? Do you think that could be a possibility?
I've always said that I wanted to do one, but it does scare me because people say that it like changes you for like 6 months after, you just don't feel the same. So that does really scare me. But then I would like to always, you know, it must be a good feeling to think I've done a marathon. But I know what I'm like, I wouldn't be able to stop. Like, I'm so competitive that I'd try and keep going the whole way and probably end up passing out or something because I haven't done the training for it. So.
One day.
I have to get into a lot of training before I consider that.
Yeah, excellent. Well, we're rooting for you in Berlin. I hope you have a really good run there and enjoy the experience. And hopefully it's just the start of many major championships for you.
Brill, thank you. That means a lot. Yeah, hopefully.
Good
Fingers
stuff.
Crossed.
Thanks, Beth.
Thank you for having me. Take care.
So a nice interview there from Beth. She shows that, you know, with her seventh at the Europeans, that you can make it happen. You can get out there and you can work a number of jobs and have a full sort of top class athletics career. So quite an inspiration for us all there, I'm sure.
We're waiting for more Brits to qualify.
Yeah. Although we're good at the sprinting side, we just, you know, they just don't take a bloody marathon team. That's the problem with UK athletics anyway. I'm sure
is that a touchy subject?
Yeah, there's plenty of people who are moaning about UK athletics. I put a moany tweet about the BBC actually on the on Twitter, and I took it down because I felt bad. But every race, the 5,000, 10,000, you'd start the race, and then you'd go over and you'd start watching the high jump and the triple jump, and you'd be like, I'm missing the most important bit of the race. I'm excited by this. I mean, people are excited about high jump and triple jump. That's fine, but the thing is, I'd rather see the high jump and triple jump after the races instead of listening to Denise Lewis. What insight is that providing for me? Anyway,
well, no, what they should do instead of playing the sprints about 20 times, that's when they should fit in the high jump, and you know, because then everyone gets an even slot.
There is plenty of time to fit it in. I don't know. I don't really, I'm not that bothered about the insight. I mean, I like Michael Johnson, but, and maybe Paula Radcliffe, but I'm not that bothered about anyone else. Gabby's nice. And Jeanette Kwachi doing the interview, and I really like her, but it's just, we like Jeanette, but I don't know. Why am I watching Colin Jackson again?
Yeah. Okay, let's change the subject. We've had lots of nice... Yeah, we've had lots of nice reviews on iTunes about the podcast. I haven't checked any on Spotify. I don't think you can leave a review on Spotify anyway, but we've had a couple of ones recently. We had one from Michelle D92, which was entitled Bus V Runner. And she says, I love the... I love the...
Just bring it, Bus V Runner.
I reckon I'd take you down over maybe 50. Do you reckon you can get up to speed in a bus over 50 metres? Actually, you're
taking me down on a long stretch because I have to stop at bus stops and traffic lights. So.
And actually, you're talking to the wrong man for the start. I remember we used to train together, and over the first 50 metres, like, I'd be 50 metres behind you because I just can't start. That's my problem.
Let's get back to the thing. Let's get Bus V Runner.
A Bus V Runner. She says, love the casual nature of the podcast, the random bus chat, and the great interviews. The quickfire questions at the end are always a highlight. Can't wait to follow Sean's progress at Project Sub 220. Thanks. Michelle D92, nice one. And then we had another one.
And then we've got
One Man Down, which had wonderfully touching insight into an incredibly courageous and inspiring young man. I think that was specifically about the Tom Holden episode, which if you haven't listened to, you should go back and have a listen to that because it was really good. Thanks to One Man Down for that review on the iTunes. And what about the Instagram, Jermaine?
We got Shabazz Badia. Says if you listen to our podcast on his way home from work in his car.
Yeah.
Giving him a shout out. When I liked his post, he was like, is this the real caramel? So a big shout out to you, brother.
Yeah.
So that's all good.
And we've had a couple of times, Sim Baresh has tagged us in a few times to his training. He's been doing some tempo running. So nice one, man. Thanks for tagging us in and good luck with your training. Yeah, nice to have people interacting with us. And if I've missed anyone or we missed anyone, apologies. We'll try and remember for the next show. Nice one.
It's all good.
Good. So you're off to back to work tomorrow, Jermaine. You're back on the grind.
Back to work today.
Yeah, back to work today.
So, and now I'm fired up. Bus V Runner, Bassini Runners. That's it. They're coming down.
You should have a new tactic to beep it. Well, we're probably not big enough to be famous for runners.
Beeping, people won't know, but on the bus, there's a special assault alarm.
Oh, yeah.
So you press it says, the driver is under attack. Please call 999. So if I see a runner, I can press that. I'd be like, whoa, is that Jermaine's bus? Like,
So if you see, what bus number is it, Jermaine?
I do a lot of buses, so yeah. So if you're running along and you hear funny noises coming out of a bus, then that's my bus.
Good stuff. Well, we'll be catching up again for the next show, and hopefully we'll get to see some people this weekend, and we'll shout them out next week. Lovely.
Cool.
Nice one.
All right.
Cheers, man.
See ya.
Bye.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall.
No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.